Yeah, I have Nick Ferrero here, which is awesome. I guess I met you, like, I think last year it was.
We met through, like, probably the Brighton Bar days.
Yeah, because it was, maybe it was when the Roast Battle came by.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So that was really cool. Yeah, so it's just been cool, like, to see, like, your stuff and always see you around, and every time I see you, you just kill, and it's been really, really cool, because when I first saw you, you mentioned being a Kyle Kinane fan. I'm a huge Kyle Kinane, like, fan, so I kind of, like, got it right away of, like, your stuff, and I wouldn't say, like, it's copying him or anything, but you can tell there's an influence there, if that makes sense.
Definitely big influence. I mean, guys like him and Sam Talent and Sean Patton.
Oh, yeah, Sean Patton, brilliant, yeah.
Anybody who's kind of silly and weird, but also kind of a fuck-up, I'm drawn to. I mean, a big Stanhope fan.
Oh, yeah, Stanhope is amazing.
You know, I mean, of course, like, a guy, older guy, like, you know, the O&A crew, Attell and Jim Norton and Patrice.
Oh, yeah.
And Jim Flunes and all those guys.
For sure.
Anybody who's just kind of not what you'd expect.
And I think the one thing that's great about stand-up, like, the one thing that I think is great when a comedian, what I consider good is someone who's not just observational, but someone who knows themselves so well. That's, like, the kind of thing that I love about Kyle Kinane is, like, he knows himself so well that he's not really playing a character of himself, but he, like, knows just the traits of himself and the little stuff to talk about and, like, what's funny about him. And I feel like you dig into that a lot with yourself and your vibe and how you kind of come off to the world. Does that make sense?
It does. I think a guy like him is definitely much more comfortable in his skin than I am in mine, without a doubt. I do more, because I didn't come from a stand-up background. I came from doing, like, sketch work and character work and stuff like that, because I never wanted to just be, like, myself up on stage. I didn't think I had anything unique to say. So it took me a really long time to actually just be a version of me up there, and I don't think I'm very similar on stage and off. I think depending on when you catch me, either I'm angry or just erratic or manic or something like that, and then off stage I'm kind of just quiet.
Well, I think on stage it's so different because you're turned on to, like, what you want to do. You know, in life you just sort of have to, like, be sort of as normal as possible, really, not to, like, weird anyone out. And then when you get on stage, you can sort of be that extended version of yourself. And that can come out. I mean, you know, I was just curious, since it's interesting to hear that you started in, like, sketching stuff, because I wasn't sure, like, how you got started in improv, in stand-up, I mean, like, how you got started in doing stand-up. Like, when was that?
So I think mid to late aughts.
Oh, okay.
My buddy Pat, and he was in a sketch troupe, and we would do a lot of, like, videos and stuff like that, and I would write for it, and I would use, like, little bit part in his stuff, and then we started doing these live shows through FMU, the radio station, and we would have these monthly live shows that was, like, a variety hour kind of thing, and I would come out as, like, different characters. Like, I came out as Lemmy from Motorhead a bunch of times, but I would just do stand-up as him, what do you call it? And I would just dress up, I think, like, before every Easter, I would dress up as a character called Canadian Jesus. And I would just, like, I don't know, do bits about Canada. It didn't make any sense. I would, like, paint myself red and be the devil and just, like, do characters, stuff like that. And then when that show kind of ended, I was like, well, I still like performing, and I can't do that kind of crap on my own because it's weird. So I just started at the bottom again and started, like, going to open mics and failing horribly for months and months and months. And my only goal when I started doing stand-up was to not be the worst guy in the room.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Like,
if I wasn't the worst one, I was fine. I felt good. I could go back the next day.
Yeah, for me, it was the same thing. Because for me, I started when I was, like, 21, almost 22. And I'd been doing improv for, like, I guess 6 years before that. So, and I always wanted to do stand-up. Like, I wasn't an improv person. I just, that was the only thing I could do at 16, you know, how to get started. So, you know, when I started doing stand-up, it was such an interesting thing to me because I had built it up in my head for so long. And then when I started doing it, there's kind of that, reality check almost of how, like, non-glamorous stand-up is. So,
yeah, no, it is hard.
It's a hard-hitting thing for everyone of what they go through.
Yeah, you're right.
And it's still the hard thing to explain to, like, you know, that's the toughest thing about putting on, like, mics and putting on shows with people who aren't really connected with comedy that much, is because you kind of have to, like, explain that it's not that big of a, like, show, like, for the stuff you're going to do sometimes.
Yeah, there's always that thing where the shows that you tell people to go to, and then there's the shows where you're like, I'm just going to go see what this one's like.
Yeah.
Because we've definitely been in spots where it's a 2-hour car ride or an hour and a half train ride, and you get there, and it's literally just you and the other comics, and maybe one person, and that's fine, that's part of it, and that's fun.
Yeah, for sure.
It's still part of it, but I've definitely dragged friends and family to shows that were very far away, where literally no one showed up. And then if it's just me going there, and that's my Friday night, I have no problem with it. I'll do that all the time. But if I have, like, a cousin or a friend with me, and they're looking forward to seeing me for the first time, I'm like, well, this isn't really, hopefully, what it's always going
to
be like.
Right. Yeah, it's always hard. Like, you never want to bring friends to, like, an open mic. You always want them to come to a show, because at least that's more put together, and, like, it's more suited for audiences.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, like, whenever I see, like, people bring, like, and I bring my mom and stuff, too, a lot, because, like, I started out doing that, because, like, I don't drive, so now I drive with other comics, but, like, the way that I always explain it is, like, open mics and stuff. You've seen the movie Dodgeball before?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know how, like, they have the coach come in, and he's like, is he weird? And then they're like, no, and then he's like, he acts all weird, and he's like, well, not weird for us. And that's how open mics are for us. It's like,
You
can bring a person, like a friend, and they'll be like, this was terrible. And then you'll be like, no, you should have been here 2 weeks ago. That was terrible.
Exactly. Or like, you bring someone to an open mic, and they're like, oh, I couldn't sit through that.
Yeah.
How do you do that once a week? And you're like, once a week? I do this 8 times a week.
Yeah.
4 times yesterday.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do it 4 times tomorrow.
And I think the one thing that's great is the... like, for it, that makes it more palatable for us is we're surrounded by comedians, and you sort of, like, when I started, I liked it a whole lot, because I felt like I just met these people that I had so much in common with over this art form. I was just like, okay, that's where you get into it. Like, I started when I was, like, younger than everyone, so it was a challenge kind of socially to get through that, but the cool thing was just like, okay, we're all doing comedy, we all really love it, and we're all in this underground, like, part of it, which was really cool to build that community.
Well, I also feel like we have an added benefit of we're from New Jersey.
Yeah.
And I really love the fact, like, the Jersey scene has always sort of been, we're not New York, we're not Philly, we're going to build our own thing here.
Yeah.
And we sort of have this, it's not even self-enclosed. Like, you've got the guys up in Jersey City, you've got the guys in Long Branch, Asbury area.
Yeah, like, Jersey Shore area.
Like, that's us. We know, you know, we've got friends from all over the place that are willing to drive 2 hours or an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
And it's cool because it's all interconnected. That's the cool thing with it, is you'll meet someone, you'll be like, oh, I have, like, 15 mutual friends with them on Facebook. It's, like, it's cool that way. And also, I just think New Jersey is totally underrated in terms of stand-up and its scene. And I think a lot of that is just lack of comedy clubs, really. And just especially where I'm from, like, you went to Uncle Vinny's, like, they have a very set, like, strict, like, thing about, like, the great thing about, like, Tim Rager and Joe is, like, them really kind of pushing the guy that runs it to, like, let younger people kind of, like, into it, because it's very, very tough, you know, it's kind of hard to explain to, like, I guess older people who kind of know the stereotypical thing of comedy of, like, comedy clubs. It's like, why don't we do comedy clubs? It's mostly, like, bars and, like, you know, these weird rooms, and it's, like, I like it because it's underground, and, like, part of me, like, I have such this, I would say I have a, like, a hypocritical thing to it, like, where I hate certain things about, like, comedy clubs, especially ones in New Jersey, but I'm like, I would sell my soul to perform at them, of course, like a total hypocrite.
That's the attitude, right? Like, you're upset with the way it works, but it's also such a, like, a huge platform. You're like, well, I would.
So it's such a thing that I have in my head of, like, you know, and that's what I love about the New Jersey scene. It's just like there's so many just welcoming places, and everyone is, like, pretty good. Like, you know, connected. Like, everyone, it seems like, I just like the punk rockness of it and the, like, underground kind of mood to it and setting. We're going to do our own thing and
yeah,
and make it work.
Like anybody we know, anybody that we run around with, would fit in just as easily in, like, a basement show in New Brunswick for a bunch of bands. Like,
oh, yeah, for sure.
Sort of, like, no, we have almost nothing in common outside of stand-up, and we're from New Jersey.
Yeah, and it's great to have that. A lot of, like, that's the other thing that's kind of great about, like, when you're starting out and, like, open mics is, like, you kind of are, like, added, you feel like you're added to, like, this TV show, and you're, like, everyone has all their, like, set characters and stuff, and they're, like, okay, how am I going to fit into this dynamic of people, and it's always been so cool, and, like, for me doing this podcast was, I just wanted to get a better, like, I just think New Jersey needs to be showcased more. Like, we just need that.
Yeah, I mean, it's also strange how you could go into a room, okay, so let's say for the uninitiated,
yeah,
each night in all of New Jersey, this entire state, right?
Yeah.
The most, like, this is what, the second most densely populated state in the country.
Yeah.
Given in New Jersey, maybe there's 10 to 15 open mics in the whole state. Conservative group. Right?
Yeah.
You could go, that's a lot of people for not a lot of mic time, right?
Oh yeah, for sure.
You could go to one, you could go to a room you've never been to before. You're gonna know at least 5 people.
Right.
And then you're also gonna meet like 20 new people. You're like, what have you been doing? Like, where have you been? Oh, you never leave this, you never go above this exit, you never go below that.
Right.
Exit.
And a lot of that is just, it's not even, it's just life, like, I think, for a lot of people. It's just, like, what you're most comfortable in, and, like, you know, it's very tough. It's, like, I wish I could get out to more places, because I think that's part of the reason why I don't get booked so much anymore is, like, with COVID and not traveling that much, like, to a lot of places, it's, like,
oh, yeah, I mean, I'm guilty of it, too. I only did a couple of rooms up here, because I'm, like, well, I don't want to have to drive for an hour and a half. Like, I'll go down to Long Branch maybe once a month.
And I've never been, like, I've always viewed, like, networking as kind of, like, a fake thing, even though, like, people, like, kind of need it. Like, I've always just wanted to hang out with, like, people who I was close friends with and be, like, that's who I'm going to do comedy with, instead of, like, trying to be with, like, whatever popular crowd there is. Because it's never cliquish, but there is a hierarchy in a way.
Yeah, no, there is, but also, early on networking, I didn't understand the appeal of networking when I literally didn't have a product to sell.
Right.
Like, I didn't have anything yet. Who am I trying to, like, I'm making friends with other people who I like.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I'm trying to get something, so I have nothing to offer. So, a lot of people I started out with who are doing well now, I'm like, oh, I'm glad I was, it was like in Billy Madison, like, oh, I'm glad I was nice to that guy.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And it's so cool, just the way that you can sort of shift with it and the people, because it's always, you can bounce off ideas with people, and that's the one thing that I love is, like, every friend group that I've sort of been in comedy has always, like, just rubbed off on me in a good way of whatever style that comedian has, or, you know, when we get to hang out, like, before shows and stuff, it just is, it's a really great experience.
Yeah, there's also, like, no better writer's room than, like, 4 comics after a show.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That's the best thing in the world, man. Especially if it's 3 guys you know and 1 guy you don't, because then you're going to become friends with that dude.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That's kind of cool. Like, most of my friends I met, I met Scott Holt in a car, and he's, like, one of my best friends in college.
Yeah, he's great.
He's great.
Yeah.
I met him in a car on the way down to Brighton Bar, and now, like, we're very close.
Yeah, it's always fun to have those relationships, and it can be funny because, like, the way that we sort of make fun of each other and stuff sometimes, people can kind of misunderstand that you don't get along with someone when you are actually close friends with someone. I see that a lot. Like, I had that with Caprio, and, like, we sort of have, like, a verbal jousting that we always did, and people thought that we hated each other. And it's like, no, I talked to that guy every other day. Yeah, so that was kind of a thing, and then, like, I know that Josh Tinley and Ricky Ramsey had the same type of, like, relationship in that way, and it's fun to watch, because I always feel like you have, like, people sort of find like they're close friends with it. And it's great to just have that person that you can bounce off ideas with and everything. And I just thought it was really cool just seeing, you know, going through your Instagram and seeing all the stuff that you did, like getting to be on Chris Gethard's podcast, and you got to open for Matt Bronger.
That was crazy.
And how did that sort of come about?
The Gethard thing I owe a great deal to Ally Manager McAndrew, because I met Chris at Power Bottom.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So I went up to him before the show, introduced myself, and he was like, you know, the Blues Notebook, and getting ready. And then I went up, did my set, and then afterwards he is just a really nice, friendly guy. He came over and just talked to me for a while. And then he was doing these live shows at House of Independence in Asbury, and I started just doing those. And then started opening for him, and then doing the podcast. Like, we just kind of became friends that way. Like, that, the same way you become friends with anybody else in the scene. Like, you needed a show, you hang out after the show. Hey, I'm doing this thing. You want in? Absolutely. And then just made sense. And then the Bronger thing was through other people I knew who were booking that show. He was coming through town. They needed a guy to open up, and there was someone who was nice enough to think that I would do a good job.
Yeah, that's great. So, like, how long did you get to do? Was it just like 5 minutes, or like what kind of
for
Bronger?
So what's weird is when I open, usually if you open anybody I've opened for, I knew already.
Mm-hmm.
So I know what they're like. I know Robert's like, he's amazing. I love that guy.
Yeah.
But I've never met him. Usually if I'm working with people I know, I kind of know, like, all right, I don't know how long you want me to do. Like, I felt weird to ask. So literally like a couple, like 15 minutes before I went up, I just kind of went up to him and I asked him, and he's Matt Bronger. He is, I'm going to say conservatively, he's 6'5".
Right.
He's truly, truly massive. And he is one of the friendliest, most open, warm dudes ever. Like, the second I met him, he was like, what's up? Like, he's in the Matt Bronger character almost. He's like, hey,
oh, yeah.
Man. And he had three of his buddies with him, and we're all in the back room just talking shit, talking everything.
Yeah.
Hey, isn't this great? Like,
that's fantastic.
So energetic and so big, so larger than life. And he was just like, hey, man. You want to do like a half hour?
Oh, my God.
So I paused for a second. I'm like, I have that much. I'm like, do you want me to do that? I was like, if you want that, that's what you get.
Oh, wow. That's great.
I'm like, hey, man, I'm going to invite, let me in with after 20, and then I'll get off stage when I feel like they're getting tired. And then he was like, yeah, man, totally. And then it worked out. But he was fantastic. He hung out after. It was a really good experience, man. I can't speak highly of him. He was very cool, and he reached out to me later to help him out with something, but I wasn't available. So then this is how this works. He was going to be. I recommended a guy up in Massachusetts to open for. So
that's great.
You go, hey man, I can't do it, but I got a guy. Here he is. So just sort of, it all gets passed around.
Yeah, that's just. It's just cool to have that moment, like, where you like someone, like, for so many years, and you just, like, get to meet that hero, and they're good, and they're, like, live up to expectation. Like, that must be so cool, like,
yeah, it is.
To have that.
What it's like with Gethard, too. He's a great guy, man.
Oh, yeah. I feel like if I ever met, like, Gethard, what would be, like, a good thing for me is, like, I know so many people that he knows that, like, it would be easy to build a rapport with, because I'd be like, he knows Angelo, he knows, like, Joe McAndrew. So that's sort of a...
Yeah, he's known that longer than I think he's known me. Like, and he's really good at, like, he's got a really good radar for picking up on, like, who's good, who's a solid guy. Like,
oh, yeah.
Funny.
I remember a couple of years ago, I saw Mike Birbiglia for his, one of his, Thank God for Jokes, that's what it was.
Yeah, he was, and I forget the name.
He was the opener, and actually there was he was the opener, and I saw him twice. He was the opener for that, and I felt bad for Mike because he did, when Chris did his set, like, everyone was dying laughing, and I was like, it never reached that spot, like, the level that he got of reaction.
Yeah, but I guess what Ringling's also going for something a little different, I think. kind of gone past this. He's not just going for yucks. Like, he's not doing oh, no kind of stuff anymore. He's grown a lot and he's doing...
Yeah, he's doing a different thing. It was just an interesting, like, contest. And then when I saw Mulaney working out for his 2015 special, Comeback Kid, it was really cool because he had Chris Gethard, Mike Birbiglia, and what's his name? The guy Dan, I always forget his last name. Dan Levy. Dan Levy. He had those three open for him. And it was just like, it was so cool because it was like, I knew those guys as his friends. Like, that's why I sort of knew about them. So I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, and it's just, yeah. And the cool thing for me of like doing this podcast is like, I get to, like, I never really go through management with people. I just message them. And it's been really great to like get on like Comics the Headline and stuff. And they always like, even though we kind of might view it as a hierarchy, they don't really view it that way. They view everyone who does stand-up as a comic. So that's a really cool thing. Like,
I think that's one of the best things about being this, is that no matter how far you get, I think you still hate yourself. So you're always going to be a little humble.
And I think I think also everyone remembers all the shitty things they went through. That it's sort of like you have that, like, just stuck in you of, like, you know, no matter what your most recent, you know, greatest set was, you'll still remember that one set from that one show that was just, like, traumatizing.
Sure.
Yeah. But it's just great, like, to see that. So so you started in, like, the like, would you say, like, 2008-ish?
Yeah, probably around then. I think I was, like, me and my buddy Pat lived together, and we would, basically, I had a bartending job, like, three nights a week. I was making no money. I had nothing to do with my free time. Mm-hmm. Nothing going on. And he had been working since college, putting together, like, the sketch team. So we did a couple shows at the Pit. They were able to go to, like, Montreal Sketch Fest with it one year. We just made a bunch of, he was a video editor, and then another guy in the, and they were all video audio editors. They all met together in school. So, like, we could go out for a day and film stuff, and they would put together something phenomenal with it.
Yeah, that's great.
Like, it really looked good. And that was really cool to see, because I was literally just, like, delivering lines. And my only strength was, like, all right, I can make this funny a little bit.
Yeah.
And that was what I could contribute. But technologically, no. Terrible.
No, that's how I felt. My friend, Rob 80, he used to do stand-up, but now he has a pretty, like, he does pretty well on his, he has a YouTube channel where he does sketch stuff, and it's, like, on TikTok and stuff, and it's great. And I was able to do that a couple months ago, and it was just, like, I could use sort of my background. When I did improv, it was, like, the same thing of, like, so many people were so much better than me that, like, any faults that I had was, like, hidden. It was, like, okay, and I can just fit in and learn to fail on stage, which is, I think, a very, like, important thing.
Oh, yeah.
Because you just got to get used to it. Like, also, the thing that's, like, funny, I've been talking about a lot with people, like, I think with stand-up, what's so different is we get to see who we're performing for, so that kind of lessens the like, hardship of it a little bit. You'll be like, oh, I'm glad I didn't make this 6-year-old Trump supporter, like, laugh. That's fine for me. I don't care about that. It's like when
that
you...
Actually, that makes me happy. If I can't get those guys, like...
Well, of course, if you can get, like, anyone that's sort of, like, cross-armed, like, that's a great, like, feeling. Because it's great to, like, subvert expectation and, like, make sure that... Like, that's a great thing that I've always loved about comedy. Like, for me, I always feel like... And I don't know if you felt this way. Did you feel like you were funny, like, your whole life? Or was there, like, a time period in your life where you felt like it switched on?
No. I thought I had the ability to kind of, like, not be what people expected. Mm-hmm. I really thought I was funny. Because people that think they're funny, No.
Right.
I've always prided myself on being able to, like, maybe come up with an angle that might not have been considered before.
Right.
Weird take on something, but as far as being the funny one, there are people who are so effortlessly funny.
Yeah.
And those people are usually good socially. Oh yeah. I'm not, so I'll take being weird over fun.
No, I think it's totally like normal. You know, it's one of the sayings that I always have about like comedians socially is like we're sort of like infants in suits. Like we try to be professional and everything, but really it's the least professional. Like out of everything compared, like you see how actors act on the red carpet and like musicians even, they're more closer to us. But like with comedians, it's so tough because, and also the good thing with it is everyone is aware of how like fucked up people can be, that there's a lot of leeway with how things go down sometimes. I used to get like so in my head when I was starting out about like, oh, I said the wrong thing socially, or I made this mistake or whatever, put my phone in my mouth, and they're like, Richard, you don't have to worry about that. And it's like, it's an interesting, like, thing. Just you're in that, it's like being in, like, mini society. It's like everyone understands sort of what we go through.
Yeah, and I've never looked at stand-up as trying to be the funniest person in the room. It's always more like, can I trick this group of strangers into agreeing with me or getting...
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like, it's a trick. You're fooling them into... Because I think, what was it? Pete Lee has a good... you ever see that movie, I Need You to Kill?
Yeah.
Where, a bunch of comics go to do this tour of, like, Southeast Asia. And Pete Lee has this thing he talks about called The Flash, where it's, like, the first minute and a half, 2 minutes you're up there. That's your time to trick them into... These are not his words exactly, but that's your chance to trick them into liking you. And once they're on your side, you can kind of mess around and take some chances.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That was one piece of information I remember for a while. I was like, oh, yeah, get in there and just try to trick them into thinking they already knew you. Like, you know...
Right. And the one thing that I think is just so great about stand-up specifically... is, and especially how the genre has changed in popularity, is the great thing is there's so many, like, it's still very niche, so there's still very, like, there's not stereotypes of people, but there's, like, archetypes of, like, people. So whoever, like, I always say, if you are a shy person, people who are 15, like, 10 times shyer than you in the audience will relate to what you're talking about. Like, you just have your subset of people that will like what you do, and that can sort of, like, carry you a little bit of, like, okay, these people get what I'm talking about, even if, like, I might not get everyone all the time. Like, I can just rely on certain audiences to like me. Like, it's just been cool to figure that out. And, of course, like, I...
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right. So it's one thing, like, I found in... I don't know. There's certain crowds that I relate to more that don't laugh.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I do certain shows in certain parts of New York, like, where everyone's kind of just, you know, listen, and I'm by no means a blue comic or an offensive comic. Like, I can work clean, I can do anything.
Right.
There are certain crowds that, even if they think you're doing well, they don't laugh. They just kind of nod and smile.
Mm-hmm.
And, which is frustrating because I'm a comic and the only thing keeping me going
is the laughter.
I get frustrated there. But then I'll do, like, a meatball dinner for a bunch of retired cops who I have nothing in common with whatsoever, and all I have to do is start being self-deprecating, and they start, like, slapping their knees, and I'm like, well, fuck. Like, this is...
Right.
Man, like, here I am. I'm getting the sound that I like, but it doesn't feel as good.
Oh, no. It can be very tough, you know, to do self-deprecating stuff. I mean, that's my main style, and it's really tough nowadays because... I think the atmosphere has changed a lot with, like, how rap music is popular and wild and out and, like, roast battling. It's, like, kind of changed where comedians kind of like to have the upper hand with each other. And to me, that's never been, like, my thing. But the tough thing is, like, you never want to go too far where you're hurting your mental health by talking about yourself negatively. And also, you don't want to make people sad. Like, that's the one thing that I'm like a person, like, I never complain about cancel culture and any of that bullshit until someone awes during my set. And then I get right, that way. Right. I'm like, no, this is supposed to be funny. It's like...
Yeah, have you ever tried to be self-deprecating and someone in the crowd just goes, aww?
That happens some... It happens a little bit. Not so much anymore. It used to, but I sort of, like, I try to reconvene it. That, okay, this has to be sillier. Like... That's how I feel with anything. You just have to get to that place where it's sillier. Like, that's the thing that I always envy with people that can do, like, political humor really well. Because I can, and I'm just like, I wish I could. But everyone that does it, they're sort of great at making it super silly that it's palatable to everyone.
Sure. But it also takes, like, a confidence and an intelligence in the subject matter.
Yeah.
That the things I'm confident talking about are not important.
Right. Me either. Me too.
The things that are not things I'm confident speaking about publicly. I have my opinions on them, but I'm pretty sure if anybody with half a brain tried to debate me, I would not know what to do. So I just know, I know a lot about certain things. I know a lot about cartoons from the 90s.
Right.
Good at that. I know a lot about different kinds of knives. Really into that kind of stuff. I got a couple science experiments I can explain. But other than that...
Right. And that thing is great, too. Like, I actually have that written down to, like, talk to you about. Because I think that's very similar to, like, what Kyle Kinane does and a lot of other people. Is being able to have references, like, obscure and, like public knowledge is, like, great for comedy. Like, once you can get certain... Like, sometimes it doesn't always work. Like, my big closer is this pop punk music bit, but... And it does pretty well with, like, people my age and a little bit younger, but, like, it'd be tough if, like, there's somebody that doesn't really listen to that music or know about it. And it's just, like, having that, like, those things to attach to. And I've always felt like the little, like, references and stuff that you have is always so, so great. I remember this one set, you did, like, the joke with, like, the Ghostbusters theme song.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is, like, I thought it was great, but I also felt like it was like, oh, this is peak, like, this is peak Nick Fierro. This is, like, him, like, totally. Like, it was so cool to see that. Yeah.
I stopped doing that joke because I found out that a lot of the crowd that I was performing in front of did not know that song.
Yeah, that's so tough.
I made a timeout. So basically, yeah, it was a joke about the Ghostbusters theme song from the original movie from like 1980.
Yeah.
So like by the time I was telling it, yeah, no one knew, no one got the reference anymore.
Yeah.
So I would yell out, who are you going to call at some point? And no one said anything. And I was like, well... I guess I'll redo this.
Right. And, you know, it was... I mean, we were talking about it earlier. Like, you guys had your sort of tryout thing with Uncle Vinny's. How do you feel like your sets went there? Because I thought that you did really well each time.
Thanks.
What was that sort of...
I got hired.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah.
I heard that. I heard that that might have happened to you. Because
I'm there with Tim, Joe, and Emily now. We're the guys. We're the MCs down there.
That's great.
I'm starting this month. I think I start. They're on vacation this week, so I start with them next week. I'm looking forward to that crowd. Like, I really do think that, like, that Jersey Shore, middle of the summer, BYO Comedy Club crowd is going to be something I can really have a good time with. Because they're going to be rowdy. They're going to be looking to have a good time. And I am kind of, like, weird enough to entertain them.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Not trying to tell them how to think enough
right.
to make them try to think, which I think is important.
And I think, like, each of you, what's really great is, like, each of you as hosts and, like, as comedians all have your own thing of, like, what you do. Like, Tim Rager is so amazing, and, like, he's just great, like, you know, the way that he is able to do things. And I felt bad, like, for the last night that the one that I saw I guess when... You did well, because I talked to Ricky afterwards, and he said that it was between you and him, and he made the mistake of just leaving, like, to get his camera, like, in his car, and he came back, and they thought that he left, so.
No, we all left together, I thought.
Oh, really? Like, he said that he went to put his equipment back in his car, and that was when they thought, like, oh, he didn't watch the whole show.
He was there at the end, I thought. Yeah, because we were all there at the end.
Because he...
We had, like, a little, like, powwow.
Yeah, and I heard that, and I was like...
No, we were all present for that.
So. Yeah, it was all present for that.
Regardless, like, Ricky is phenomenal, man.
Oh, yeah. He's really great. And he's just, like, great at just, like, confrontational stuff, like, just being able to put in that situation where you can totally turn a room into your favor. It's like... It's really impressive.
Yeah, he's a very charismatic man. You can you're on his side right away. Look at this guy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that whole crew down there of everybody on that roster for that last Uncle Vinny showcase was a friend of mine. So that was like, I had some family come out for that show, I had some friends come out, and I was like, they're like, is it going to be good? I'm like, I don't know what the rest of the crowd's going to be like, but I know everybody up there is like a buddy. So
yeah, that's the cool thing is when... Really, when you have that friendship and you also know, like, who is good. Like, you're like, okay, these are people who are good. And, you know, it's so, like, the thing that's so tough is it can be so reliant on the audience to be a good crowd. Because you'll see your friends have a good set and it will be a good set to you from, like, a critical standpoint. But it won't do well in the room. And you'll be like, what is wrong with these people? Like...
I mean, look, here's the thing. A lot of people are just... Sometimes I've met a lot of people doing this. I've been doing this for a little while. There are some people who are too stupid for jokes.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
There are some people who you can hit them with a concise, easy, set-up punchline. And it's not that they don't think it's funny. They do not understand what you're saying.
Right.
Like, there's only so much you can dumb down certain crap. And I'm not saying this was... I'm just saying this for all over the place.
No. Not all over the place, yeah.
Specific, but... I have some stuff that I'm like, it's pretty easy to get. And I've done it in rooms all over the place where people just, they look at me like a dog when the voice is coming out of the radio instead of the human. And they're just like, what?
Right.
But the best part about hanging out with a bunch of comics is that none of us think we're good.
Oh, yeah. So you never have that.
Everybody's shitting on themselves. And then once we've all shit on ourselves, we can start shitting on each other.
Right.
And that is really the best part.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
After a show, being like, well, we're all garbage. It's kind of nice. We're in this together.
Right. It's always that camaraderie of, like, okay, this is... Because, you know what? I think the thing with stand-up, what makes it interesting, is it never really goes completely the way that you wanted it to. Because if you did perfectly, you just would never get up and do another set. You'd just be like, well, I mastered it. It's fine. Like, you never feel like you mastered it. Like, that's the thing that's great.
Yeah, that's like the trap that people fall into. They'll go up, they'll do their first open mic, and they'll kill.
Right.
They'll be like, oh, I got this. And then they try to do it again, because they caught lightning in a bottle, and they'll try to do it again, and then it takes forever to get back.
Oh, yeah.
To where it was.
I mean...
My first open was awesome. My second, third, fourth, up to, like, the 100th was just absolutely horrendous.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for me, it was, like, a mix. It was, like, I kind of... The thing that I always say is I never knew how to technically write a joke until it was, like, 2 years in. It just had really weird premises. And then once I got, like, the formula down, I was like, okay, set a punchline. I know how to do all that. It was, like, it got easier. But I look back at it. I used to, when I was, like, not even 2 years in, like, barely, I would do all the Bringer shows in New York, which is, like, kind of, like, a mix of, like, either very genuine or, like, a scam. But it was cool because it was, like, okay, I'll get booked on this show in New York. I'll have 3 weeks to work on my material and then I'll perform it. But I look back at it now, I'm like, why did they let me talk for 5-6 minutes? Like, now I could do pretty well. Like, that's the thing that's kind of funny in hindsight is, like,
yeah,
you know, I look back at it now, I'm like, it's like, how could they let me talk for 5-6 minutes?
I mean, those Bringer shows, man, I have so many stories about those. And yeah, like, I've never successfully done a Bringer show.
Oh, yeah. There's always something.
Like, well, because it's like, okay, it's a 5-person Bringer.
Yeah.
That means I have to find 5 people willing on a Friday night to go to Manhattan or Brooklyn or wherever, pay a cover, pay 2 at a minimum.
Yeah.
To watch me and, what, 15 other people. I'm like, I couldn't ask this of anyone.
Right.
So, like, at one point I got so frustrated I wasn't getting booked. I offered a club. I was like, listen, the price of that many tickets and this much food is like $200. Can I just give you $200 and I'll get a 5-minute tape that you're telling me could get me on Letterman, because that's how old your references are, because they've been off the air for a while. Because that's how the club owners talk. Like, this will get you on Letterman. Like,
right.
Hey, all right. And then they would always say no. And I remember one night, it was a 2-person Bringer somewhere in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm doing it. I bought 2 tickets and I was sure. I was like, I bought 2 tickets. I bought them. I put an APB out. Anybody that's around in Brooklyn, come to this show. I got you. Don't worry. I'll buy you a beer, whatever. I could not get anybody to show up. And I saw people on the street that I knew, and they wouldn't come in. And I remember being at the show, and they made me wait until the very, very last comic had gone. They weren't going to let me go up, but I kept buying drinks. Like, I was, like, still just hanging out.
Yeah.
I was, like, smiling, being like, I don't know what happened. This is crazy. And begrudgingly, the two guys let me go up last. And it's a show went off for 2.5 hours. It was a mess.
Uh-huh.
But I went in and, like, never offered me the tape, never offered me the pictures or anything that they took. And, like, I got really frustrated until I saw, like, the two guys that had run their show who were, like, older than me, kind of, like, not that funny. You could clearly tell they were just, like, trying to work this scene and trying to work this room.
Right.
I watched them try to slip one of the comics a bag of Coke in front of her mom. She brought her mom, and the Coke bag fell on the floor, and her mom slipped out and dragged her out of the room, and I just stood there laughing at the doof. Like, just stood there laughing at the guy because he made an utter buffoon of himself in the club that he worked at, trying to get a hot shot. Which is pretty great. And then afterwards, that show, there was an actual show after it, and I knew one of the comics on it, and they went and put me up.
Oh, so that's nice. Like,
I got a spot after that. And it just felt nice. I don't know. It was a little bit of, like, little short-term comeuppance.
Right. It's always cool when that stuff happens, and you never know, like, how things will do. That's why, like, I'll sometimes, like, I'll go to shows, like, that I'm not on, because I never expect to be put on, but, like, it's happened a couple times, where it's, like, if you're just in the ether, like, if you just are in a place for a majority of a time, you sort of, like, you sort of build that rapport with everyone. They're like, okay, this person is cool here, they're a good hang, they'll be able to be put on the show, and it's always cool to have those little moments of those opportunities.
And that's the thing, like, I love, my favorite people to hang out with are comics. Like, they're amazing, they're fun. All my friends in comedy are, without a doubt, the easiest people to be around. There's always something going on.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And also, this lends you a lot of opportunity to be by yourself, which is all I want.
Oh, yeah, so, true. Because,
like, an hour and a half train ride, a 2-hour car ride, just being alone at a bar trying to write, and, you know, like, hours and hours and hours alone, and then the payoff is you get to be around your favorite people.
Right.
And you're like, oh, this is great.
I get the sense that you're similar to me. I'm like both. I'm like, I can be very social, but I also love my alone time. So there's always like, mix that's always good. It's like,
yeah.
It's like, the only bad thing that I realize is, like, I have to go out and do stuff to make sure that, like, I can come up with jokes. Because that's, like, the hardest thing, really, is you want to do stand-up, like, every night and as much as you can. But you have to live life in between. And
that's true. And
that can be tough sometimes.
Yeah, that's very true. I feel like some people don't need that. I feel like some people are fine waking up and just going on.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, man. Waking up and just going on Reddit for 4 hours, 5 hours, watching TV, doing a jigsaw puzzle, and, like, painting miniatures for like, a tabletop game. And
right.
And then they have this insane debt because the inside of their own head is enough.
Right.
And I mean, sometimes I got that, sometimes I don't, where...
Yeah.
I go out, and all I hear in my head is TV static because I'm outside. And
then right.
I'm home, I'm like, oh, here's all the things I wanted to think earlier today, but I couldn't. So,
right.
It depends. It literally are. Some people definitely need to get out if they're storytellers, and they have to live a crazy life to tell a story. What I don't think they realize is you could just make those stories up.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
No one checking your homework.
Right.
Just say a crazy thing happened to you and talk about it. As long as you're a good storyteller, you can make that shit happen. There's no reason to actually do it.
Yeah, there's so much freedom with stand-up that you don't realize when you start. Like, you don't really know, like, the bounds of what you can do. And then you're like, oh, this is easier to do than I thought, especially with that. And, like, to me, my stuff has always been weird. So I'm always like, if I can just explain this to normal functioning people, this will be, like, fine. And even if people don't get it, my thing is always I just want them to kind of understand where I'm coming from, at least. So if they get, like, the tone of it, like, that's the main thing for me. Is, like, they might not understand it, and it might not be for them, but they can at least be like, oh, I understand why that's funny to him or interesting to him.
Yeah, and as far as, like, being weird is more like a homing beacon. Like, it's not for the immediate surroundings, but if you put it out there, someone will respond somewhere, someday.
Yeah.
And then that's sort of the payoff that way. It's more of a long game.
Right. So, you do usually, like, the longest you usually do is, like, a half hour?
think that's a pro. I've done maybe a half hour. I've been asked to do. Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm looking for anybody willing to give me some time. So yeah, I did a half hour for a couple of times. A few shows, only once to open. The rest were sort of like headline spots, or
most times
were like, I was only supposed to do 20 something. I blew the light, which I try not to do ever. I really try not to do, but I have terrible eyesight. And if it's an outdoor show during the daytime, or a bar show or something like that, where I might not catch it, I've definitely screwed up before. I'm way too much.
Yeah, it's always a tough.
Especially if you're on a rant.
Yeah, timing is a tough thing to learn. Like, I remember when I started recording myself, like, it's like, oh, I thought this joke was 5 minutes long. It's only, like, 2 minutes long. It's like, you really have to get used to it. And once you get used to doing it, the only thing that's bad is you want more time. Like, you sort of, like, get too good. You get too, like, not good, but, like, you get too used to it that you're just like, oh, I have more than 5 minutes that I want to talk about.
Yeah, I can see that. And like, I honestly, there's been a like top priority thing I've been meaning to do for like 3 years now, which is take all of my jokes and actually write them down, because I don't.
Oh, yeah.
I literally just write down like keywords and phrases and stuff, and then I just kind of say them to in my, like, if I'm writing, I'm writing in my head, and I'll just write down keywords. So I've been trying for years to just have the patience and discipline to sit down and write them all out, which I don't think I'll ever do. But more importantly, is to time them. Absolutely, like, the only time I've been successful in doing that is if I have a tape and I'm trying to chop it up.
Yeah.
I'm like, how long is this? This is a minute. This is a 2 minute long bit. This is like, I thought this was a 4 minute long, 5 minute long joke. This is 2 minutes. This is nothing.
This is nothing. And it's really, like, an interesting thing to me for, like, since 2020, I've been writing, like, this, like, special, basically. And it's so, like, hard because I want to put... It's hard because you got to put it in, like, a narrative. So, like, putting stuff in order and being like, okay, this topic goes into this, and this is how long, and it's, like, yeah, it's tough. And I think the great thing, I've always liked writing new stuff, because I used to be really into, like, creative writing. That's what I used to do, and my teachers would always get so, like, upset with me, because I would always, like, just stop plans, like, cold turkey. I'd be like, oh, I'm not working on that anymore. I'm working on something new. And with stand-up, that's not frowned upon. You can just write a new joke every time, and it's not like... And you can just go back and work on stuff, too.
Yeah, definitely. Going back and working on stuff is huge, where it's like you've been doing it, you do a joke for like 6 months, it doesn't work, and it goes away.
Yeah.
And then a year later, you're like, oh, that's only part of a joke, and now it's part of something else, it's bigger, and then it becomes... Like, you know, it's almost like just pieces of debris floating in water. Eventually, they just kind of gravitate towards each other. Like, oh, this is good. I can use all this. This was garbage. These are all throwaway lines. And that's why I always... Do you ever go through, like, old notebooks and stuff and just kind of...
Oh, yeah. Like, to me, what always happens is I'll hear a new person, I'll hear anyone's set, and I'll be like, oh, yeah, I have a joke about that topic that I just remember now that I used to talk about. And to me, the thing that's been really interesting for me in the past, like, close to 2 months now, is I never had consistency. I never had, like, a time where my sets would go, like, pretty well, like, each time. It was always, like, up and down and, like, just normal. And then for these past 2 months, it's been great. And, like, the cool thing is I've been going to a lot more mics that are newer to me. And that's always, like, that first week is great because I can do, like, my 10 minutes that just works everywhere. But it gets boring because I don't want to be, like, on autopilot. And the tough thing is, like, audience members are coming back now since, like, COVID has died out. It's, like, there's less of an... It makes me more lazy to not do new stuff, because I'm like, well, if there's different audience members, they haven't seen me do these jokes before, so I can just do them. And...
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah, going up in front of a different crowd all the time will make you always think you can do, oh, I can do the same thing every night, and it's different people. But it doesn't make the jokes anymore.
No, it doesn't make the jokes anymore.
Yeah, I don't know. Messing up with the order of things is always interesting, like starting with your closer, just starting from the middle, or things like that. Or just telling yourself, okay, I can't rely on this anymore. Let's try something new. Like, is it, okay, do you remember the feeling in the beginning when you were terrified to go up every night? Like,
oh, yeah.
Trying to make that happen again.
Trying to make that happen again,
like,
yeah.
Oh, I'm not going up with anything tonight. Like, you ever have those where, like, I'm
not oh, yeah, for sure.
That's always, I mean, that's always fun. That's always weird and scary.
Yeah, it is. And it's the way to really, like, that's the great thing about comedy. You got to do it when it's not the easiest. You got to put yourself in those situations where you want to get yourself better. Like, you know, that's why I'm always trying to go to new mics and stuff and just, like, because I also, there's so many people that I know that I just don't get to see as much. And it's, like, just being in that atmosphere because also, like, people just get to see you. And it's, like, cool. Like, you get to see, like, a different set of people each time that you know and perform in front of. And you sort of get to, like, just get the atmosphere. Just totally great.
Yeah, and it's just fun, yeah.
And it's just the hang and everything is always cool. Like, I love those, like, I love seeing the Jersey City people, like, all the time. Like, I never really get to go there that much. So, like, I'm not really as close with anybody. Like, there's no issues, though. Like, everyone, I really get along with super well. And, like, the thing that's great about, like, Mark Henley is, like, I started with him. And when he went to Jersey City, it was, like, kind of cool because, and it was kind of, like, a blow to us because he was, like, our mascot in a way of, like, we just loved him so much. But it was, like, I was, like, oh, he's going to do so well there. People are going to love him.
And he did, man. Like, I knew him before he moved here, but then as soon as he did, he really hit the ground running. He started running that mic at a sandwich shop, and then he started running shows. And he really made, like, the Jersey side of comedy fight club kind of blow up. And I credit him a lot with that. He's also just like a guy who kind of, he's a positive dude.
Oh, yeah, very positive.
He's like a weird life coach for our crew. Where it's like, well, all right, Mark, he's like a voice of reason almost, even though he's batshit insane.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Crazy.
He's always been that way.
He's also like a positive guy.
He's always been that way. And it's just like, it's interesting to also see people like, you know, it's the same thing in life with any friend or anything. Like, you see people get older and you're like, oh, I knew that guy when they were young. And it's like, it's like very cool just to see that. And just see anyone like get success is kind of the cool thing in stand-up, and I think anything, is like, it feels like justice when that happens. You're like, okay, this person, like, other people see it. Like, you know, it's always, that's always gratifying, like, to see that.
And, like, that whole crew, like, Mark and Ben and Matt and all those guys, they're all doing very different stuff.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Ben is, like, someone who is so great. And, like, I saw his show, like, a couple months ago, and it was great just to see, like, and also, like, cool for me just to see someone do it. Like, when I see people do, like, hours and stuff in, like, 40 minutes, I'm like, yeah, it's possible. Like, it's possible to do that, and it's, like, cool to, like, bring your own thing into it and make it your own and, like, just see that. And I love that. And he's been super cool. Like, he is such a nice guy. It's kind of amazing, like, that he's so, like, well-known at being good at the roasting. Because, like, I've never really seen that with him. Like, I've never really seen him do it that much. But, like, I can't, like, imagine it because he's such a nice, sweet guy.
He is, but he's also, he's, like, a weird demon. Like, he's a hot, like, he has a piece of perception that is beyond most people's.
Yeah.
You can look at your soul, figure out what your flaws are, and then say it in a really funny way.
Yeah.
It's absolutely hard. I roasted him once years ago, and I will never do it again. I think he wrote my favorite roast joke of all time, not about me, but about Scott Holt.
Oh.
He is absolutely devastating to roast. He's insane. I love Ben to death. He's incredible. Going up against him is terrifying. It is weird, but I think the reason he does so well in those roasts is because you don't expect it.
Yeah.
Because you just see him standing there looking a little bit timid, but a little bit happy that you think he's timid.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like, there's a certain look in his eyes where he's, like, just playing it down a little bit, playing his ability down, and then the second he starts talking, it's over for anybody who underestimates him.
And that's always been the cool thing. Like, I'm always mixed on if I like sort of the roast batting stuff, and like, I think it's just because I'm not like my strong suit, so I try to be positive with it. It was so weird when I like first met like Scott Holt through that, because he was the first person I ever competed against in that Comedy Fight Club, and it was just like it was a really weird experience, because like we didn't know each other before, so like there's no animosity, but it's like weird afterwards. You're just like, we just spent the whole entire time that we first like saw each other just saying mean things to each other, and he's great. Yeah. He's like, he's super awesome, and every time I see him, he just does well.
And some folks who you meet for the first time when you're roasting, and that's always awkward.
Yeah.
And it goes either way, where it's either like you never speak to them again, and you kind of become buddies.
Yeah. And he's always been super cool to me, like, afterwards, which was just great. I was like, okay, that's great. It was such, like, an interesting angle that we both took at each other, which was really cool. I was just like, everyone talked about how he was like this party guy, and I was like, I know so many comedians that are like that. I was like, he's kind of boring to me. And that was sort of the angle that I went with it, which worked really well. And then he just pointed out like how weird I am, which was great. And it was just like, it's so weird being like featured in that too. It's such a cool thing. Like we mentioned, like the way they put it together and everything. Like I really, even though I'm not my strong suit with that, I'm like, I love that atmosphere and I love those guys. Just being able to do that. So, do you have any upcoming shows and stuff that you're doing?
What got going on? Well, I started Uncle Benny's next week, so starting July 12th, I will be at Uncle Benny's. I'm there 12th, the 20th, the 26th this month. The 14th of July, it's Friday, I am at a brewery in Long Island.
Oh.
And I am looking for what is. I got a flyer.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, I'm going to. It's called the Squarehead Brewery.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be there. That's going to be weird and fun. I'm looking forward to it. And then every first and third Thursday, I try to hit the Crockpot show at Pet Shop. It's always an amazing hang.
Oh, that's great.
Comics. First and third Thursday. And then who knows? Other stuff could be popping up.
Right.
I never know. I usually don't know if I'm going to show until like a week before. I'm not very good at getting stuff way ahead.
No, it's always tough. It's always on the fly usually with like stuff that happens and how you get in. It kind of works out that way. Have you performed in, like, I know you were in a different place recently. Do you perform in different states whenever you're in different places?
This year I've done 10 states this year.
Oh, wow. That's great. Yeah, 2 years ago I was able to go to Texas, and that was really cool. It was just 3 days, but it was like, it was just awesome to be on Austin and just like,
hell yeah.
Because it was kind of funny, like the way that I was in, the time that I was there was when Joe Rogan was supposed to be taking over the club that was there. He ended up opening his own like recently, but he was supposed to be taking over. So like a lot of people were visiting from different states, and it was just like. The last night I was there was just great, because from, like, 3:30 in the afternoon to, like, 10, we just did, like, mics all around the town, which was just, like, awesome. Of, like, okay. And seeing everyone, it was kind of, like, cool to me. Like, it was so weird how it wasn't so obvious to me, but it was, like, stand-up comedy is, like, the same everywhere. Like, it's the sort of, like, it just was the same everywhere. It's like, okay, these people are really popular. There's this guy that's, like, the best. Like, he does the best. And it's just, like, was the same to me. So it was, like, kind of cool. I was like, okay. And everyone in Texas that I met was super nice. And being able to have that, like, connection with so many people is super cool.
Yeah. I never got up in Austin, but I visited there once, and I just hung out in clubs. I met some people there that I was still in touch with, and it's a really cool town. It's a really, really welcoming scene, despite the fact that it's, like, a bunch of people flooding in to get famous from it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, kind of from there are still really, really, really cool.
Yeah, and it's cool to put yourself in those places and just be like, okay, I'll see how this goes, and it was super cool to me just to have that opportunity and to do that.
Yeah.
I love your the name for your Instagram. Shtick Pharaoh. I think that's great.
Yeah, I picked picked a very difficult name to spell.
No, but it's perfect for you. I'm like, yeah, that fits.
I, well, my name was taken, so instead of just putting a number on it, I was like, I'll make my name hard. I already have a hard to spell last name. People always omit.
Thank you so much for doing this. So hopefully I'll get to see you soon. I'll definitely have to come to Vinny's to see you, because I'll definitely try and do that.
I'll be there.
Yeah, for sure. All right, great.
I'm looking forward to this.
All right, that's awesome. All right. All right. Talk to you later.
Right, hopefully thanks, see you man. Soon. I'll see you later.
Yeah, bye. Sure. Bye. All right. That was Nick Fierro.